it's above and nothing like a rebel fist. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. Thought and getting an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can also join us on the bbitumi.com/timeforanawakening. That's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening, and we're streaming live there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Tumi. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:06 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Sunday evening, January the 17th. And this evening, we're in a rare Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening with open forum. So anything that's on your mind this Sunday, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it. We always got some things we talk going to introduce into the sphere of conversation. But the floor is open, so you can chime in and introduce anything you want, or you can talk about some of the things that me and Richard might throw out for discussion. And you can always do that by joining us by dialing 215-490-9832 with questions or comments. It's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:12 here on this Sunday evening, January 17th, in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in a rare Sunday open forum. No guests scheduled today, and you know, we'll kind of talk about things that's on your mind. But before we do that, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. Brother Ellie, how you doing there?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm contemplating this weekend we're going in to in honor and I guess celebration and reflection of the civil rights and human rights, you know, sacrifice of individuals to get us this to this point, and wondering, you know, as I only know the phrases, Elliot. I think Dr. King said, where do we go from here?
Yeah. you know, Richard, before we kind of throw out some things for discussion, because we're in open forum and the callers can bring up anything they want, I do have some things I want to talk about. And it kind of dovetails on what you just stated. But before I go back to something that you just mentioned, I seen that one of the folks over there at the museum, I think he's one of the sits on the board. He's an artist. Brother has like a handlebar mustache.
Richard Watson.
Maybe that's his name. I didn't catch his name, or I probably did, but I don't remember it. I just remembered how he looked. It was a unique look.
Right.
He had a white beard and he had like a handlebar. Okay, that's the same brother. Yeah, he talked about how his parents were artists. He's an artist, and he did some exhibits over there in reference to like a reflection of our struggle here in this country, and he did it through art or something. It was and he was, you know, just talking about it with the person that was interviewing him.
I didn't get a chance to see that. But if it is Richard Watson, he's also did the the Church of the Advocate during the Black Power Conference that was in Philadelphia in 68.
That's the same guy, because he talked about his activism around that time and how he was involved, or he was here when they brought King here the first time.
Right.
Yeah, so it's the same guy.
Yeah. And they did, which the mural still exists in the church. It was when they were trying to find a place to have the Black Power Conference, the only institution that would avail them the space was because of Father Paul Washington, and who was then the head rector of the Church of the Advocate, Episcopalian Church, and they created around the whole sanctuary. At that time they were using art. Art was another form of political and cultural expression. So they were using art to be able to, as a means of politically educating, the community. And it was Father Paul Washington, was, encouraging to allow them the space. Which goes to this, where do we go from? Because at that period, right, they were using politics, they were using political organization and political education and cultural education in order to amass us to deal with the contradiction of being in America and in the Democratic Party, and looking at our quality of life and recognizing that we had to be not just about influence, but about power.
Well, Richard, we get ready to take this ride again. And it reminds me of going to the amusement park when you were young and your parents took you to the park. And back in the day, they had an amusement park here in Philadelphia. For some of the residents that remember, it was outside of Philly. It was called Willow Grove Park.
Mm-hmm.
And you went there, and a lot of the high roller coasters, my mom and dad wouldn't let me get on. But the one ride that we could get on, besides the bumper cars and all, was the Ferris wheel and the merry-go-round, especially, as little children.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was always fascinating on the merry-go-round on the Ferris wheel, because the Ferris wheel will go up so high and you see all the type of scenery, and it'll go round and round, same way as the merry-go-round.
Right.
And you always, when you come back, you're at the same spot, and your mom and dad is waiting for you when you get off, or your mom or whatever. Your parents is waiting for you when you get off, and you go to the same spot. And I'm just drawing an analogy because, however our people want to look at this, you're getting ready to get on the merry-go-round again.
Mm.
You're going to go round and round, and you're going to come back and be at the same spot. Because we're dealing with a system that was set up by white supremacists, based in white supremacy, and to bolster white supremacy and white hegemony. And they always trying to etch out a way to keep you appeased, whether it's by siphoning off a few as a buffer.
Mm.
It's never any type of thing where the system has to be scrapped and come up with a system of equality for everybody. That's not in the European mindset. And I'm not just saying that, throwing it out, and people might say, oh, that's a racist statement. You just have to look at people's historical experience. If you can point out in history, in the European history, where this has been done, then I'd have to look at that. We'd all have to sit down and look at that. But if you can't, then how do you expect something to happen any different now? It's not going to be any different. It's just not. I think that how we look at it has to be different. We have, and you know, Richard, let me say this, because I want to play some clips from, it was a precursor to the 72 convention that was hosted by Tony Brown, and it was on the television in 72. I think it was 4 days before the convention, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And they had a cross-section of leaders at that time of organizations that were present. And they spoke about their position, the organization's position, and how they wanted to see blacks move forward, or how they perceived us moving forward. I'm going to play some of those clips, because we're almost coming up on an anniversary of that particular meeting and of that 72 convention, where you can reflect 50 years, whether those men were right, whether they were wrong, who turned out to be traitors, who turned out to be sincere. Because if you look, Richard, all of those men that were involved at that time, if I'm not mistaken, all of them are gone. They went to the ancestors. All of them. So we'll be able to do reflections on what they stated, what they did, their actions, and what the people did in reference to who they were speaking about. Because all of them were speaking about the system that we were living under, and giving their opinions and assessments on how we should struggle in that system. I'm going to play some of the clips, and you'll hear their voices. I want you to, even if it's making notes, because I think we need a conversation in reference to this, Richard. I really believe that, and you talk about this a lot, and I've made some notes here, that during the 19th century, we had several conventions. I think the first one was here in 1831. It was in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Several conventions leading up, and I think the last one ended in 1890. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. The 1900s, but yeah, what they call the Colored Man Convention, yes. Then they started having state conventions.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And we didn't have another one, basically, until that 72.
Mm-hmm.
So do we need to talk among one another? I think that we do. I might have a pan-Africanist or nationalist position, and you may or may not hear it come out on some of these programs. I hope that you do. But I understand that my mindset, and I wouldn't say that it's not the prevailing mindset of a lot of our people, especially if you go among the grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
but it might not be the mindset of all of our people. Mm-hmm. It might not be the mindset, and people can attest to this in the listening audience. If you believe a certain way, even in your own family, it might not be the same. Even in your extended family, it might be the same among your siblings or among your household. And if the children are grown, it might not be the same. But among your extended family, you might have all types of mindsets among your family. And that's just your personal family. So in my opinion, Richard, and then I'm going to get your opinion, and then I'm going to go to some of these clips. I think that we need to have these talks among our people, because some of these organizations and people of influence, they have influence over the minds of our people. They do. That's the reality of it. And if we don't come to the table and get them to put their position on there, integrationists, assimilationists, pan-Africanists, separatists, if we don't come and put those positions on the table before the court of public opinion, which is our people, then I think we're doing all of us a disservice. They need to hear this. They need to see the clean glass sitting next to the dirty glass. They need to hear why these things have been failing for our people, and the people that have been in leadership have been unable to do anything to stop what's been happening. They need to hear the explanations, not the rhetoric, not the smooth political talk. They need to hear real talk. But the thing I like what Tony Brown did, he was fielding questions from all over the nation, Richard, mm-hmm. in the technology that they had in 1972. People was calling up. He had the switchboards. He showed the people at the switchboards and everything.
You see how many people that were sitting there?
Yeah. And they were fielding questions. In fact, he had to stop a couple of times and tell a lot of the participants, shorten your answers a little bit, because we got thousands of people that have questions.
No, wait, Elliot. He was a journalist. He was professional. He was saying, look, y'all, shut up. Let the people talk.
But I'm just saying, this was in 72. Yeah. We need this conversation now. We do. Give me your opinion on it, and I'm going to play some of these clips for the listening audience.
I mean, other than agree, because, you know, that's a consistent theme, and that's why I always use the color conventions or Negro conventions and, you know, even the convention that, you know, Garvey had as the tool that, and I think you placed it really very, very, very well, you know what I mean, to be able to put all these things on the table in the court of our public opinion. Because what you see is a lot of people individually putting things on the table, but they're not coming. There's no gathering for people to say, oh, I align or I don't like. There's nothing. It's nothing. Just everybody like horses trying to get to the end on their own in the name of. And this is what it bothers me, Elliot. And, I want to hear, the voices that are appearing. It bothers me because you can't, for a listener who is not critically thinking, you can't tell if they're a representative of you or they're speaking, utilizing you, but representing themselves.
Someone else.
Right.
Or someone else. Finish your thought, and
I like to hear the.
I'm gonna go to some of these clips, and this is a precursor to the 72 convention. Tony Brown, I guess it was an extension of the Journal, although it didn't have Journal written up there on the in the monicum, but Tony Brown was hosting a cross section of Black leadership prior to 3 days or 4 days before the convention. The 72 convention in Gary. And organization leadership was represented there. You had Pan-Africanists and you had integrationists with clear positions. Now, I want the listening audience to listen closely, because I think that what we have to do until a person is revealed as a, because some people might have, and you got to be honest, some people might have an assimilationist mindset because they don't know what else to do. And I'll use the Rodney King approach to it. You remember what Rodney King said, Richard?
Yeah.
And it was almost a childlike approach, but he was a grown man saying that. Can't we just all get along?
After they done beat him to death.
But that's not realistic. That's what he wanted. And you got a percentage of our people that want to believe that. Can't we just all get along? But we have to come to the table with concrete evidence where this is not going to work, or we've tried that. We have to try another approach. We have to be scientific in regards to this. We can't just say, well, I'm a nationalist. We got to force this type of thing because it might not work for a lot of our people. They might not want to go along with what you're saying. They might want to see more what you're talking about. They might not understand what you're talking about. Some of our people have never been exposed to a lot of different information. They haven't. So, Richard, let me go to some of these clips. Mm-hmm. They had 10 representatives. Well, they really had 12. 11, I'm sorry. Ralph Abernathy, who represented SCLC. Amiri Baraka, who represented the Congress of African People. And he organized both of those conventions. The one in 72 was the culmination. Elijah Muhammad and Minister Furukhan was present on the phone. They wasn't there. Elijah Muhammad did the speaking, and Minister Furukhan was with him. The president of Howard University, John Cheek, the Black Christian Nationalist Movement was represented by Reverend Albert Clegg, the CBC, which was in its fledgling at that time, was represented by Charles Diggs, the Council of Negro Women had a representative there, Dorothy Height, the National Congress of Racial Equality, CORE, Roy Ennis, representative. The Urban League was represented by Vernon Jordan, who was the director at that time, and NAACP at that time director was John Marcel. Listen to these men, their position, and even among these the integrationists of this time, it was a common theme. I want to see if any of the listeners can pick up on it. I'm going to play some of these men's positions. Listen to it. I think it's important because we're in the same state now. So it's not like, well, that was ancient times. This is a different time. No, you'll hear the same things being talked about by some of these men. But let me play some of these clips. The first one you'll hear is Ralph Abernathy, if I can get it up here.
Each panelist will now make a brief opening statement, after which we will place your questions before them. Reverend Ralph D. Abernathy, President, Southern Christian Leadership Council.
The Southern Christian Leadership Conference, known to many throughout our nation as SCLC, is that organization that was founded by Martin Luther King Jr. and used as an instrument to redeem the soul of America. SCLC is now a national organization working across the South and in the major cities of the North for the rights and the needs of black and poor people. Basically, we organize masses of people and nonviolent community action movements and programs. We're working for the total liberation of black people through economic development and control of our black communities. We believe in amassing the collective power of blacks, other minorities, all people, and progressive forces. We seek a radical change in our national priorities, a redistribution of wealth and power, and the creation of a nation of peace and human decency. We also seek to develop and to strengthen our international ties to movements of other people across the world. SCLC is that organization that will see to it that America feeds its hungry, house its ill-housed, provide adequate medical care for all of its citizens and live up to its pronouncements and its dreams.
Now, Richard, that was Ralph Abernathy,
mm-hmm.
giving his synopsis of SCLC at that time that was founded by King. Mm-hmm. SCLC was a assimilationist organization or integrationist organization. But if you notice some of the things he said, they wanted the total liberation of black people.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to totally be able to control our neighborhoods and communities. Do you hear what he was saying?
Mm-hmm.
But then he went back and forth. I want everybody to listen to these people clearly, because it's some areas of commonality that can be grasped, and then you can force these people into a position one way or the other. Let's go to the next one, which was Amiri Baraka. Hold on a second.
Imamu Amiri Baraka, Executive Committee, Congress of African People.
The Congress of African People is a pan-African nationalist organization that, as we believe in the unification of black people, Africans, wherever we are in the world. We also believe that we will not survive and develop unless we are able, through unity, to achieve self-determination, self-respect, self-reliance, and self-defense. We also work to unify diverse groups of black people, African people. We believe that there should be unity without uniformity, that all black groups must be able to work together around common purposes.
Before I continue, I would like to state that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is with us by phone from his home, and along with him is Minister Louis Farrakhan. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad will, at the end of the visible panel, make a position statement by phone from his home.
Okay, now that was Mary Baraka, Bridget. His position was clear.
Mm-hmm.
That he wanted, he mentioned about the diversity among black groups, but he said that we should look for commonality and move mm-hmm. on that.
Unity without uniformity.
Okay, yes. Keep in mind, again, you had assimilationist groups here, integrationists, black bourgeois, if you want to term it that, nationalists and pan-Africanists all sitting there. Got to tip my hat to Tony Brown when he did that. Now, the only one, and I didn't put Elijah Muhammad's on here because Elijah went well beyond the 2 minutes that he wanted Yeah, and we if anybody knows anything about the Nation of Islam, Elijah Muhammad, you know what he was saying. So we don't even really have to play it, although it would be lengthy. It went well beyond the 2 minutes allotted to all the others. Maybe at another time I'll play it. But we understand, or we can understand what Elijah Muhammad's position was. But let me go to the next one, which was John Cheek, who at that time was the president of Howard University. Let's hear him.
Our next statement will be made by Dr. James Cheek, president of Howard University.
One of the major issues facing our nation in this decade is the issue of quality education. Many Americans, black and white, assume that quality education can occur only through integration, where integration has come to mean the destruction of or closing of black colleges and institutions of learning, and black students enrolling in predominantly white institutions. At the level of higher education, that is, beyond high school, this attitude enacted into public policy has resulted in the continuous deterioration of one of the nation's most important, most strategic, and most essential groups of institutions, the black colleges and universities. Unless a major national effort is launched to change the public attitude toward the black colleges and universities, and to provide for them substantial sums of financial support, many of them will not exist by 1980. And those that do survive will have become either predominantly white in student body and faculty, or so poor in quality as to render them meaningless as collegiate-level institutions. The destruction and impoverishment of black colleges and universities will contribute to the destruction of any possibility of this nation achieving true democracy, true freedom, true equality, and true justice. It will be a national tragedy if America, through indifference, disinterest, and outright bigotry, allows the black institutions of this country to become academic wastelands. It is very clear that the development of strong and distinguished black institutions, not simply the inclusion of blacks in white institutions, is indispensable for the attainment of racial equality in this society.
Okay, so you hear James Cheek, I said John Cheek, who was president of Howard University at that time, talking about racial equality and things of that nature. And he believed that, you know, by keeping black schools open and properly funded, this could be achieved.
Mm-hmm.
So we've heard three out of the three first two panelists. We heard two basically assimilationists and one Pan-Africanist.
If I may, Elliot,
which
is interesting about Cheeks, right? On one hand, he's speaking that this is a national policy to have integration. But on the other hand, he's saying, but we want to maintain black higher education institutions.
Exactly.
I think that, you know, so, and so it's like, well, we're not saying we want that type of integration. And then he goes on to say, if they're going to survive, the integration that will have to happen to survive is that white students become a part of black higher education, become a part of HBCUs. So, and that still isn't acceptable compared to having these HBCUs service black students. So that's a self-centered position, but at the same time, as you say, it comes off, it's balancing, it seems to me, right?
Yeah, yep. That's why I wanted to listen to audience to listen clearly to the positions of these men, because they, even though they were individuals speaking, they were speaking for organizations. The same thing we have now. You have organizations out there and people speaking for them. Now let's go to the next one, which is Albert Klieg, who was the head of the Black Christian Nationalist Movement. Listen to Reverend Klieg's position.
Reverend Albert B. Klieg, Jr., Chairman, Black Christian Nationalist Movement.
I represent the Black Christian Nationalist Movement, and I state the Black Christian Nationalist Movement's position. We feel that it could very well be too late for the black man in America. Probably the next 5 or 10 years will indicate whether or not the black man can survive. Our struggle for survival is a very real struggle, and the white man has prepared genocide for black people. Unemployment, the black man is no longer necessary. Unemployment is going to be a way of life for black people. We are going to face increasing dangers and problems as the days pass. And we're totally unequipped as black people to deal with them. We're a part of a slave culture. We have no preparation. We have no black institutions capable of dealing with white racist institutions designed to serve only white people. We must deal with the problem that confronts black people by building black institutions, by understanding that only a separatist position is a viable position for black people. Any organization or any leader in America who today advocates integration is a foe and an enemy of black people and their survival in the coming years.
Now, Richard,
mm-hmm.
That was Reverend Albert Klieg. And listening to him, I don't hear any, and I don't want to get off on any religious thing. It's not about that right now. I don't hear of any Christian minister even approaching any conversation like he had.
Mm.
It's just not. But I'm glad the listening audience heard what he said. I think it was important to what he said, because these things that we're dealing with, that's what I'm saying. If you listen to these men, the problems that they said that our people were facing then, they're still facing them now. But the only thing different, Richard, is that you have had this explosion of black incarceration and the explosion of crack that destroyed black families before this mass incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had directed attacks, almost like a missile that they created that goes right in. I didn't forget. It doesn't even matter. You've had directed attacks since these men have been speaking 50 years ago on the black community specifically to help destroy, almost what Albert Klieg was saying about whites wanting to destroy black people. Mm-hmm. You've had attempts to really destroy black folks politically. That crime bill came straight out of, now crack didn't come out of legislative body, even though it was the United States government that put it in black communities. But that mass incarceration came straight out of the legislative body. In fact, the guy that's going in was one of the authors of it.
Mm-hmm. And before that, speaking to the high unemployment was before the crack.
Yeah.
The high unemployment, the crack, because that's what the riots was about, right? You know, 60, 70, 80% unemployment amongst the youth. High unemployment, crack, and then mass incarceration. But, you know, but all three of them, whether they consider at this point, one thing that is consistent, that we need strong institutions. They all said it, whether it be higher education, our institutions need to be strong. Community, liberated communities, our communities, institutions need to be strong and build black institutions, our institutions. And what we see is that we barely have what you outline as the population, and then look at the institution.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. And I hope the listening audience is looking for any threads of commonality between what these men are saying, because it's a direct oppositional approach to their philosophy of black freedom. But let me go to our next one, which is Dorothy Height, who was the leader of the National Council of Negro Women. Let me play her here.
Miss Dorothy Height, President, National Council of Negro Women.
Black women face the double handicap of racism and sexism. And Mary McLeod Bethune recognized this as far back as 1935 when she founded the National Council of Negro Women, because she realized that the black woman, whether she was trained or untrained, stood outside of the mainstream of American opportunity, influence, and power. The National Council of Negro Women has encouraged black women to assume leadership roles and to serve as catalysts for social change. Today, as a coalition of 25 national organizations, we've realized that it is too late to have divisions. Women from all walks of life, different ages, political persuasion, social and economic backgrounds are mobilized to help increase the strength of the black family and the whole black community. The work of the National Council of Negro Women is based on a philosophy that I think could be expressed in three words: commitment, unity, and self-reliance. And the energy of its woman power is harnessed to fight such chronic inequities as racism itself, inadequate education and substandard housing, hunger and malnutrition, insufficient child care, drug addiction, the lack of economic opportunities, especially for women and their families in the rural South, and the demeaning conditions facing so many of us as household workers. It is late. It's too late to think about a matriarchy. It is the time to think about the unity of the whole family, and women of the National Council of Negro Women feel that in this day, black women can make a difference for justice and liberation.
Now, Richard.
Yeah.
You hear Dorothy Height, and she said that we don't need divisions among black family, that the matriarchy ought to realize that the women can help liberate the black family. I think that's the last thing she said, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we see what's going on now. The television and the media, white media, spins this thing where black women is the, you know, black men are like a afterthought. They're not involved in these families. They're not around. It's the women power. It's the women, black women rock and things of that nature. Little slogans, sayings. But they're not saying it in a unifying manner. It's for a division among black people. So we have to realize the subtlety and the shrewdness of European mindset. But Dorothy Height was saying it from another aspect, that this is a battle and we need our women involved with the men. That's what I grasped from what she was saying.
Yeah, and Elliot, I think, you know, that what you have, where you, how you couched as we go through this, that this is a system, and I think people don't really understand it. What does that mean? Like, we really need to drill down. When we say a system, what do we mean? It means that it's a rules of regulations and laws that perpetuate a particular outcome, regardless who's sitting, it affects. One, the person who is sitting in the seat is implementing the rules and regulations and law. So if the rules and regulations and laws is about white domination, I don't care minority or majority, in the end, that's what the system is set up to do.
Exactly.
And it'll do these other things, you know, as we said, split up the family, create, dislocation of employment or men, destroy the institutions, you know, create communities that are not sustainable. The system is set up to do that by the rules, regulations, and we call it policy.
You got it. You got it. You got it. Let's go to the next one, which is Charles Diggs, who was chairman of the fledgling CBC at that time. It had just gotten started, basically. But he was the chairman and director or chairman of the CBC. Let's go to his position statement at that time.
Representative Charles C. Diggs, Jr., Democrat, Michigan, and chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus.
The United States is the second largest black nation in the world. The West African nation of Nigeria ranks first, having a population of over 60 million blacks, which more than doubles our own. The Congressional Black Caucus, composed of the 13 black members of the U.S. House of Representatives, believes that we are on the threshold of a new era of political power for blacks, not only in America, but in Africa and in the Caribbean area. There is a kind of heightened solidarity among black people now, who are becoming more conscious of the intricacies of politics as an instrument for change. We are witnessing the emergence of a kind of nationalism, of a kind of black awareness that has spilled over into the political arena on an international scale. And the Congressional Black Caucus is committed to that kind of objective.
Okay. Now, you hear that, Richard. You hear his statement that that the Black Caucus and black political power at that time was on the threshold of a new era of political power in the U.S., and he mentioned in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, let's say this. at that time when he said that, Richard, he had to be already involved in conversations with other people based on some of the information that you shared. Do you want to do that now in reference to him?
Is that in relationship to what happened at the convention?
Exactly.
And particularly how the CDC, those political representatives set the tone of really, and should I say it, Elliot, the dissembling of the convention. And it becomes because of a foreign policy position, well, a domestic and foreign policy, right?
Go ahead.
But foreign policy. It was Hatcher, but so here they're at the convention. They're at the end of the convention, and they're creating the policies and platforms. And then one of the questions comes up that they're making, the convention is making a position on. And I'll just start with the question is. The question is about Israel. And it says, I would recommend everyone go and get this book, The Defeat of Black Power, Civil Rights in the National Black Political Convention of 1972 by Leonard Moore. And he states in chronicling that the last resolution that caused a great deal of turmoil at the National Black Political Convention was the issue of Israel. Black nationalists had long supported the ideal of Palestinian homeland. And Peniel Johnson, Joseph, writes that many Black radicals identified Palestine as a colony and its people as a community of color under siege. So without the Black Power era, Jews and Black nationalists would have a tense relationship. Jewish support for Black civil rights issues was expected to be repaid with the unequivocal Black support for Israel. With this backdrop, Reverend Douglas Moore, another Christian minister, that's my friend, a staunch Black nationalist and head of the Black United Front, introduced the resolution. And I'm not going to read all of the resolution, right? Whereas the establishment of a Jewish state of Israel in 1948 constituted a clear violation of the Palestinian traditional right to life in their own homeland. Whereas thousands of Palestinians have been killed, thousands have been homeless by the illegal establishment of the state of Israel. Whereas Jews ruling Israel have demonstrated fascist desire through the occupation of other Palestinians in Arab land. And whereas Israel agents are working hand in hand with other imperialist interests in Africa, be it therefore resolved. And I won't go any further on that. What happened right after the convention? The press coming at the white press, and who they go to? Hatchett, Richard Hatchett. And this is the exchange in relationship to this, the pressure, the CBC, right? As expected, 3 days after the close of the convention, both Richard Hatchett and the Congressional Black Caucus came under intense pressure from white liberals and Jewish groups to denounce the convention in light of the controversial resolution on busing in Israel. On the issue of Israel, Hatchett called the resolution a most unfortunate incident. When pressured by reporters about how it got passed, he said simply, "I think it was snuck through. It wasn't, well, I'm not going to give no commentary, but this is how he's reporting. As reporters continue to probe, now they're probing, right? They're going to make you say something on the record. As reporters continue to probe to assess whether or not Black folks supported Israel, Hatchett told them that the resolution passed late in the session with less than half of the delegates in the attendance, and that the resolution did not reflect the overall view of the Black community. I didn't see any strong anti-Israel sentiment on the floor. Hatchett was prepared for the volley of questions because of Jewish money had supported and funded civil rights activity throughout much of the 20th century. So I'll leave it there. So you see, and it becomes, that's the riff. It breaks down to, you know, they already start, but that's where it breaks down at.
And what has changed?
And you played or read with a recent new black senator out of the most dynamic, politically motivated state that they're giving us right now out of the state of Georgia. And you gave the, as you say, the public, the you know, public report, him saying to the Jewish community, I am a representative of you.
Yeah. He said, I'm going to be a Jewish representative in the U.S. Senate. That's what he said. Warnock in Georgia. Now, I didn't know those black folks that live down there that voted for him, that pulled that lever, live in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem. I thought they live in Atlanta and neighboring towns and Macon and places like that. He said out of his own mouth that he was going to be the Jewish representative in the U.S. Senate.
And we heard it out of, what's her name, the vice president, the vice president-elect?
Yeah.
We heard out of the supposedly going to be the head of the congressional black caucus, but the Congress, maybe possibly take in, what's her name, Nancy Pelosi, Hakeem Jeffries.
Yeah, Jeffries, I mean, said it. Martha Fudge said it, that she represents Jerusalem, Israel's interests. Martha Fudge, who is going to be the HUD director. The same thing. But the reason I'm saying that and wanted you to add that in there, because Diggs was at this precursor to the convention only 4 days away. You know, those people didn't just jump up and call those leaders of CBC there to that meeting with Israel in 1972. They were already talking to them. They already showed them that they objected to this National Black Convention. Whoever believes that they just jumped up and said it under the clear blue sky is fooling themselves. So all I'm saying is his statement there, his opening statement and his participation in that meeting was totally disingenuous.
Because he said, we see that the sentiment of black people here and the population size of black people here equals the population size of Africa. And we see a unity between and a solidarity between Africa and black America. Now, when it comes down to 50 years of policy, where does that show up at?
Yeah, that's why I wanted the listening audience to hear these men and women, or the one sister, Dorothy Height, who was present at the time, with their positions, with the only convention that we had in the 1900s. And that was the precursor to the convention that was hosted by Tony Brown, that had some of the leaders there. The convention had a cross-section of a lot of people there. But these were leaders of the organizations that were present. Let me finish a couple of these statements here from, because there's only three more to go, from representatives that was there. Here we go with the representative of the Urban League.
Mr. Vernon E. Jordan, Jr., Executive Director, National Urban League.
The National Urban League believes in a pluralistic, open society, one in which black people have the same range of choices and options as any other citizen. The Urban League's action programs are carried out by 100 affiliates across the country, and they serve the minority community that is in need of our programs and our community organization projects. We believe that a necessary precondition for an open society is the presence of strong black institutions and the achievement of economic parity. We say it is not too late for black people to get themselves together and to join with others, blacks, browns, and whites, to bring about the necessary restructuring of our society. We believe it is not too late to realize the political and economic empowerment of black people, and thus to achieve parity with those whose skin is white, whose opportunities have not been withheld, and whose progress has been steady.
Well, everybody knows Jordan. In fact, he's still, I said that a lot of these have passed on to the Nationals. I think Vernon Jordan is still around, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't remember him passing.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's clear that, you know, he had an assimilationist position. That's what's clear. But he did say some threads of other things that have been stated by other men that he mm-hmm. claimed that he wanted to see about black people having some type of independence in the society that they live in. He did say that.
And parity.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, as you were doing that, because I was looking at one of these representative groups is the Black Economic Alliance, this group of black professional and business executives. And the only reason I'm bringing it up, because he was talking about parity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in their agenda, and they have an agenda, and I for those who would go back to 2017, when we were talking about them as having a PAC, which in their PAC, they were supporting, what's her name? Abrams, to be governor of Georgia. Well, here they're saying, they make the thing that one, and quoting King, 100 years later, the Negro lives are lonely islands of poverty in the midst of vast oceans of material prosperity. And then they say, non-Hispanic whites had a medium house wealth of $139,000 compared with $12,000 for a household of blacks. And it's less today. So when Vernon Jordan was saying that in 72 and talking about the programs of this institutions and what they were doing, what happened? That's the critical question. What happened to where we're now? The wealth disparity is even greater, not less, than when he gave the pronouncement. And they've been continuously working. It ain't like, you know, like other organizations, they had some that they could, where is it?
What happened? And see, that's why, Richard, I mean, to you nailing it. That's why it's necessary for all of these different ideologies or approaches, I want to use the term right, approaches to be brought to the table of public opinion. Because where is those results? He's been working for the past 50 years in just what he said, working with whites and everybody else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it would seem like some of those things that he wanted to achieve for black people would have been achieved. And I ain't just talking about for a few. When the masses of our people is going steadily down, and use the words of Mr. Farrakhan in that clip, because a few of people got a few of positions of power, a few got a little money, and the masses of our people going steadily down. He's been working his plan, so to speak. He's been working with whites, Clinton and others. He's the best friend of Clinton. They golf buddies and everybody else. He's been working with all these people for 50 years, and our people are going steadily down in a worse situation than they was 50 years ago. Let me play. We got two more of these voices of people that were at that meeting. Let's go to the next one, which is Roy Ennis, who was the head at that time of CORE. And listen to what he said, because, you know, some of his things is, well... Let's go. Let's play it.
Mr. Roy Ennis, National Director, Congress of Racial Equality.
The Congress of Racial Equality is a nationalist, pan-Africanist organization of the Garveyite variety. We feel the survival of black America is threatened by racial schizophrenia that plagues a great portion of black leadership. Malcolm called this problem the problem of the house nigger against the field nigger. Its destructive ramification exists yet today. Black masses are governed and led by an elite few who have split loyalties between their black and white families. These racial schizoids are leading us down the path of racial genocide through the propagation of forced integration and the calculated assimilation. Black people could very well disappear as a people and certainly lose all prospect for black political, economic, and social power and unity. I say this feeling a profound sorrow and a heartfelt concern, for destruction looms critically before us unless we meet head-on the problem of the white-imposed leadership of the mulatto aristocracy and their Bantu lackeys. CORE will not shirk its responsibilities to reveal this truth and expose this conspiracy against black people.
And that was Ennis. Listen, I didn't see nothing wrong with what he said, but his actions later on in life, the little strange dichotomy going on there, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just leave it at that. I wanted the people to hear these men and women's voices, the positions of their organizations, and what has happened 50 years later. Let's go to the last one, which is the head of the NAACP at that time, John Marcel.
Dr. John A. Marcel, Assistant Executive Director, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
When the NAACP was established some 63 years ago, a number of leading authorities in this field declined to join with it because they said it was impossible that black people could survive 50 years in this country under the conditions then prevailing. 63 years of history has passed. And like my organization, I am dedicated to the proposition that it is still possible to achieve genuine racial justice and meaningful equality among black and white Americans through the social and governmental structures we now have, modified as needed through the democratic process. I believe that the goal of an integrated society, nourished and formed by healthy cultural diversity, is still attainable. I also believe that there is no guarantee that we will be successful, but I am convinced that if we have any chance at all, it is along the road which seeks a common American destiny and insists upon a partnership of equals along the way.
Now, Richard, that was Marcel, who was the head of the NAACP at that time. You notice how he started out his introduction or synopsis of being critical of some of his ancestors who was gone by that time, by 72.
Mm-hmm.
They were critical in the forming of the NAACP because...
William Monroe Trotter.
Yeah, because of the involvement of some of these people we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, 63 years later, we are still here. Like, you know, like, okay, so, you know, what are you saying? Why make a statement like that? But he said that also that he believes all these things can be achieved through the governmental agencies that they have at that time.
With little reform.
Yeah, with just a little bit of reform. So we can see his position clearly. Just like I said before, you had nationalists represented there, you had assimilationists, and you had straight out, you had integrationists, and you had straight out assimilationists. And then it became obvious in retrospect that you had a few traitors sitting up there. Now, before we go, because we're going to take a break, before we go to the break, Richard, no, I'll do that after the break, because I want people to hear this exchange that they had. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're in open forum this Sunday evening here on Time for an Awakening. We'll be getting the callers involved, because I see some callers here. I guess they're chomping at the bit. Hopefully they bring something to the table. They don't have to talk about the subject we're talking about. You talk about anything you want. But you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind If our people could if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you've called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:24 in the city of Philadelphia on this Sunday evening, January 17th. And I'm sorry. And we're in open forum this Sunday evening. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call and you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Got some calls on the line. I want to go to them, but I would ask the callers to be just a little bit more patient for about another 6 minutes or so. I want to play, it was a couple of questions that was asked initially when they, after the introductions of all of the people that were there at the prelude to the 72 convention, again, which is the only one that we had in the 20th century. What was that, the 21st or 20th, Richard? I'm kind of losing it. That's the 20th. It's the 20th century.
So we're almost out of the 21st.
I know. it was a couple of questions that was asked to the representatives of organizations that was there. And the first two questions, I just want to play them for the listening audience and play the responses of what was said. And then I'll go to the phones and bring some other folks in. Let's go to question number one that came to, that was introduced by Tony Brown.
First question is from New York City for Reverend Abernathy. Would you categorize the struggle between yourself and Reverend Jackson as a power struggle between black men?
Well, there is no struggle between myself and the Reverend Jackson. As you will recall, Reverend Jackson served as a staff member of Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And he did an excellent job, I think, in that capacity as the director of our department, Operation Breadbasket. And when he could no longer carry out the orders of our organization and be governed by the organization, he resigned, he quit, and I understand that he has established now his own organization. There is no power structure between Ralph Abernathy and Jesse Jackson.
Abernathy and Jesse Jackson can wrestle from here to Los Angeles. They're still not dealing with power. Black people are powerless. They've been put outside of the whole white power structure. And all the organizations, NAACP, Urban League, SCLC, National Council, Negro Women, all of them are talking as though black people have power. Black people don't have any power unless we can begin to build black institutions and realize that we're dealing with a power struggle for survival. All these organizations are leading us straight to hell and genocide. And Dr. Abernathy ought to understand it couldn't be a power struggle because neither one of them have any power. Black people have to begin to build institutions. Every institution that exists belongs to white people, was built by white people, and serves the interests of white people. And for black organizational leaders to be sitting there talking as though they have power, as though they represent something, we want to represent everybody, we want to bring everybody together, we want to build a beautiful America. We don't want to build no kind of beautiful America. We want power for black people, and we're going to have to fight for it. It demands confrontation and the willingness to do anything necessary to get power. And we got to take it away from white people. White people are not going to give black people anything. Politically, economically, or any other way, black man is no longer necessary in America. and the white man is hell-bent on genocide. So we have to understand we've got to build institutional power to deal with the white man who has decided to destroy us.
Oh, thank you, Reverend, for underscoring my point.
Yes.
That this is merely a gimmick on the part of a white racist society to divide black people.
Right.
There is no power structure struggle between Ralph Abernathy and Jesse Jackson.
Now, Richard, you heard Abernathy first give his response, and then Albert Clegg, the Reverend Albert Clegg, jumped in.
Right.
And you heard his response to the question. Both of them ministers.
Right.
But it was a huge gulf between his assessment and answers and Reverend Abernathy.
Right. And taking in mind, one was making a personal assessment and the other one was making a institutional assessment.
Yeah. Yes.
You two personally don't have no power because you don't have no institution, no black institution for you to even be talking about. You got a power struggle. You have difference of opinion. You have difference of point of view. But if you're talking power struggle, how can you do that when you don't have no institution that you control by your people? And I hope that, as you said, I hope that we're getting that, because each and every one of us has to ask ourselves, what institution are we supporting in giving that institution power? Because the only way it gets power is by people's support.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just highlighting some of these things to let the listening audience know that it's paramount that we have these discussions among black people. Discussions to determine the fate of our people, from people that's supposed to be in leadership or lead organizations that have people's ears. I mean, I can go out there as a town cry and just say stuff, and I might have influence over my own particular family, but we need to be able to bring these people to the table, similar to what Amir Baraka did, and at least get the public opinion, get these people in the court of public opinion so people can hold them accountable to what's being stated. Hold these organizations and the heads of these organizations accountable.
And you know, Elliot, in that moment, they realized they wanted to have an independent governance. You know, we talk about power. A party, right? They wanted to have an independent governance, not be a part of a governance mechanism called the Democratic Party, but one that was truly laid out the agenda items for black folks, not to give, but to be clear. And they knew they had to deal with the adversity. But the point that I thought was interesting that comes out of that period, they knew that look, we're not going to be able to get to that point. So let's just have an assembly so we can agree that we're going to create our own independent party,
mm-hmm.
wrestle with the white power party system for the goods and services that they are denying us. So let's just create the assembly. And we seen what even that got fractured before it could even be able to come into being.
Yeah. Yeah. And not necessarily from just black folks doing it, from outside forces doing it. That's what I want people to really understand.
But the press, look at the press. I mean, they badgered him right, from the beginning. Why, y'all voted this way on Israel? And then it was the Israeli group. I mean, using that. You just using that. But it wasn't, as you said, it wasn't just them. But because they're in that club called representatives, they knew they had to, like, they had to talk out of both sides of their mouth.
Now, let me play this last question, and then we will bring in some listening audience. Here's the second question that was asked. And this question, you can ask this question tomorrow to black folks. It's the same question. Listen, folks. We on a merry-go-round. We're getting ready to start it in a couple of days when they do this inauguration. We're on a merry-go-round again. round and round and round, and when the ride stops, you're in the same spot when you started. Listen to this question that was asked to the heads of the organizations almost 50 years ago.
We have a message here, question for any member of the panel. Does the panel think the Democratic Party can serve as a tool for the liberation of black people, or should it be necessary to create a new political party?
Now, let me stop there a second. Everybody heard that question. Listen to the litany of answers from the panelists and really, really listen to it. Take it apart. Write some of it down if you want to. But listen to their responses.
Should it be necessary to create a new political party?
No political party can serve as a tool if it's dominated by white people. Black people have to build their own institutions, their own institutional power base from which to work. And the only possible power base that black people have is the black church, which has to be restructured. Its orientation has to be taken out of the clouds and begin to build on earth a kind of a nation of black people here on earth who are dealing with reality in a programmatic kind of way.
Would Mr. Baraka or Congressman Diggs like to speak to that since you're involved in the political convention?
The National Black Political Convention, which takes place in Gary, Indiana, March 10th through March 12th, will be addressing itself to the empowerment of black people through this kind of an instrument, without any reference to partisanship. And I think that it is consistent with the implications of that question, because without confrontation with both political parties and outside of the political party political structure, obviously we're not going to be able to translate what represents our potential power into anything meaningful.
Before I continue, Richard, now that was Charles Diggs that had that comment. And he was already in conversation with other people to derail what those men were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You say outside. It can't happen outside.
Outside. But he was already in conversations with people on the outside. Mm-hmm. See, that's one thing we got to learn. At least we can learn from these experiences. Number one, I believe that we got to do this. We're going to have to bring all of these people to the table. So the court of public opinion, which is black communities nationwide, can hear the position of these people. And number two, we got to be able to filter out these traitors from among these organizations and groups, because this man clearly was operating outside to derail and to destroy what those men were trying to do. He was clearly doing it before he was doing this talk here and before he attended that convention. Now, let me continue on.
Okay, you want to respond to that?
Yes. Our basic position is that the first thing we have to realize that we are a people, a particular people, that we are not Americans except by default of being here in the same space. But what we have to realize and what we are trying to articulate is that I think almost all of our brothers here have a correct position to a certain extent. From the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to Brother Clegg to Congressman Diggs, that our problem is that we seem to think that the diversity of our beliefs is somehow has to keep us apart. That I think when we learn that it is institutions, alternative institutions, that will be our salvation. But we have to be able to orchestrate our community. That is, to pull together a kind of unified national black community so that the Christian nationalists or the Christians or the Muslims or the people who are talking about integration or the people who are talking about Garveyism, that somehow we can function as a nation of people, as a people. That we can sit, just like we're sitting here, and say to each other, try to agree on certain things that we have to do as a people. So that, say, we can agree that the Christian nationalists and the Muslims and the, you know, people who are politically motivated, that say on one issue we can get together and deal with that particular issue from the point of our collective strength, because we don't have any power because we have not focused and created an instrument through which to translate our power potential into actuality.
Any such instrument would be wholly dishonest.
Now, wait a minute. Now, Richard, that was a Mary Baraka.
Mm-hmm.
before I go to that next, because there's three more voices going to be on here. Your opinion on what he said?
I'm, you know, like, I don't know where I got it from, Elliot. I do know where I got it from. And it may be out of the romantic notion of history, right? I've always looked at the African civilization as the composite of what we have to do here, in the sense of those civilizations of Guatemala and Songhai, they were confederations, which means they had to go and be able to negotiate unifying terms with different ethnic groups in order to be able to create a unified governance process. And when we look, we're centered in our own history and our own understanding of our history, pre-colonial, pre-trauma, you know, then we'll see that that was done. Now, is that an easy job? No, it's not easy, because people have groups have their own interests. But can it be done? Yes.
Yes.
But it takes work. And a lot of times people will say, because they don't want to do the work. Why? Because they feel like if this guy is going to give me the jump, white domination, then why should I negotiate with you? You're going to give me jumps.
Wow.
Right? I mean, it's you know, as simple as that. And now it's even going to be harder than they had it, because the technology of separation is even greater.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'll stop with this, but you know what fascinates me, and I look at myself. They didn't just have political, ideological people. They had what they call street people. God, you know, hustlers came to that convention.
Everybody was there.
Because gangs came to that convention. Because they felt that at that moment, that was the thing to do, and they were willing to negotiate. But it was the structural people that betrayed ordinary people. And you see ordinary people, it's their sons and daughters that wind up in prison off of the disparity of policy about crack cocaine compared to, you know, powder cocaine. It's their sons and daughters that was locked up by or killed by police on that level. It was this is what we see, the devastation. This is 72. We ain't even get to 80. We ain't get to 90. And definitely ain't 2000. So it's not easy, but I don't understand. And this is why what you're saying is so important. Unless we can have dialogue and understand that our difference doesn't mean our hostility. It's that we have to have understanding of how do we find the common thread and be able to accomplish something in spite of our difference. Where is that mutual agreement at? Is that romantic? I'm just saying that we got history that shows that we as a people did that.
Can
we
do this, exactly.
With 1,000 different languages. Each language was an ethnic group. And you could see they created civilizations in different parts. So we just transplanted here. And they had rebellions. When you look at Nat Turner, I mean, these weren't the same ethnic group people who came together and said they were going to fight for their freedom and liberation. They came from different ethnic nations.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's my thought.
Yeah, but and just keep in mind in the backdrop of this retrospect that since these men and the one woman that was involved came to the table to try to field questions from around the nation with black people, that it was at least two, and I'm just going to highlight two, calculated attacks, almost like a stealth missile, against black people since then by Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
The 80s with crack cocaine, which was directed at the black community. Now, any whites that was affected of it, that was collateral damage to Europeans. But it wasn't directed towards them. And this starring Prison Industrial Complex, mm-hmm. with slavery that never ended. That was directed towards the black community. Attacks to destroy black families came from the minds of Europeans since these men came to the table. So you got more things to talk about since this, if this political convention or whatever is organized. You have more things to bring to the table in retrospect of what these men talked about 50 years ago when they were under attack then. And you heard Albert Clegg and them saying that we might not be around 10 years from now. You heard them. Because of the attacks then.
Some of our callers say that too, right?
Do who? Say that again?
You hear some of our callers say that too.
Yeah, I'm saying now. But you heard Clegg and them say that then. And it wasn't even these calculated attacks that we've talked about since then. The audience might be able to throw some more out there. These have been calculated attacks by Europeans against the black community. Nobody else. If some of their people been caught up, they consider that collateral damage. Let me play these last few voices, then we go to the calls, because I know people have been waiting. I'm sorry. Let me go to a couple of these last, wait a minute, hold it. We're still dealing with that number two question. Let me play the rest of that response. You heard Mary Baraka, and I think this next one is Roy Anderson's next. And then you'll hear Marcel from the Urban League. It's the last two voices you'll hear. This one is Roy Ennis.
Unless we are able to come together and admit our diversities and identify them, for us to stop lying about what we are. We have a serious problem in this country among black leaders, wherein very few these days will honestly call themselves integrationists while pursuing that path with all of their energies and resources. We need to be able to admit our diversities, identify them, then there might be a chance to come together in some kind of instrument.
All right, we now have, Dr. Morrison.
I'd like to make a brief, quick comment. I hope it would have the effect in part of bringing our discussion back into a reality of the here and now. And I have no quarrel with people who want to engage in philosophical speculations about the ultimate culture and the ultimate this and the ultimate that. But I call attention to the fact that we are a minority of 10 or 11% living right here and now in the United States, in the midst of institutions in which it is certainly true we have very little power. It seems to me that while some are pursuing the long-range goals in one direction or another, that some of which have been enunciated here, somebody has got to be, in effect, minding the store and seeing that the problems of black people who are hungry in Mississippi and Alabama are being met, that they're being fed, as our emergency relief program is doing, as Dorothy Heights Council's program is doing. Somebody has got to see about finding jobs, about seeing people are trained for jobs, because no matter what system we have, people are going to work by the sweat of their brow, and that's the way they're going to earn their bread. They're going to have to know how to work, and how to work skillfully and well. And these are problems to which we have to address ourselves. Now, Imamu Baraka has notably, in Newark, operated on this level. I'm quite sure that his views as to the ultimate future of black people are very different from mine. And God will only tell, some years hence, who is right. But he works to get people registered to vote in the city of Newark so that they can use some of the power. If people are powerless in Newark, in part at least, it's because they don't use what power channels they have. And I think we need to address ourselves to the ways in which we can build unity on specific problems, specific needs, where there is analysis and action.
Richard, before we go to the callers, you know, he mentioned some things there. That were good solutions. He tried to dovetail it on with some of the other men, even though in the beginning he tried to disparage some of their remarks, similar to what he did before when he talked about the people romanticizing. They were romanticizing the situation our people was in. But when he mentioned about Mary Baraka's approach to this is totally different than his, that's without saying. But he made mention of something that should strike the listening audience. He said, God will let people know who was right, or something like that. God will reveal who was right. Well, if you're looking at the Almighty, then he's already revealing who was right. If you go 50 years down from what these men said then, at that precursor to the conference, when they was fielding questions all over the nation from black people, he told you then who was right. He's telling you now who was right. But I think that we do need to bring these minds to the table for the benefit of all our people to hear. Not to hear necessarily who's right, because I don't believe no integrationist approach is going to work, or no assimilationist approach damn sure ain't going to work. But the people need to hear these men's reasons why they believe that, why they're continuing down that path. It's got to be clear. It can't be no ambiguity about it.
You know, one thing in his response, which shows our trauma and our schizophrenia, as someone said earlier, because on one hand, he said, in talking about this high, you know, what's that, like pie in the sky kind of thinking, that's hearing it. Well, at the same time, which is Baraka, right? Baraka is saying, I'm calling, and I think those who are thinking, I'm asking us to think. It's called strategic vision. Baraka had a strategic vision that we have a unified people, operate from as a unified people with our diversity. But at the same time, he gave him kudos saying, like he's doing in Newark, utilizing the tool to be able to access power. So if you don't have no vision, that wheel you talking about, then you just going around in circles because you ain't going nowhere. But if you got a vision, you're using the tool to get somewhere. You're not just using the tool to be using the tool. And every 4 years, every 2 years, every year, you coming up and say, we got to use the tool. We got to use the tool. We got to use the tool. Use the tool for what? And that's what he was saying. So on one hand, he's creating this dispersion. And on the other hand, he's saying, well, he's doing what we would be doing. Crazy.
Wow. Let's get a couple calls in here. Let's go to Ohio. Ohio, question or comment?
How you doing, brother? How you doing?
Great, great.
I mean, the whole point of what you bringing up, like 50 years ago to today. I mean, this is what I have in mind. This is what I was thinking about. Look, black people, you know, we have to win on our own terms. We have to be able to do two things. It's like we have to be able to win and defeat and overcome on our own terms and on the terms of our adversaries. We have to be able to do both. And that's the thing that
we really don't put in my
it's like imagine
well, no, no, wait a minute, but I don't want you to go too far because I'm a little cloudy. When you said okay. We have to win on our own terms and then win on the terms of our adversaries.
We have to be able to do both only because, like, in this real world, like, there's actual adversity going on against us that goes on terms that are not our own. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's then how the can you win on your own terms when your adversaries want you to lose? If you win on their terms, you lose.
Well, no, what I'm trying to say is, like, not win on their terms. I'm saying, like, be overcome adversity in spite of the terms that the adversary is imposing or conditioning. It's like Jesse Owens in the Olympics, right, against Germany in 1936, right? Black man, not his rules, right? Not his rules. All he has to do is race, probably rig this and the third. Clearly black man won. Clearly black man beat the white man on his own terms. Beat the world on his own terms, right?
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, I understand. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
It gets really difficult for black people to overcome in discord and how would I say it? Just this tension against, I'm talking about black people here. Africa can defeat the world on Africa's own terms. It has before. Sometimes, though, it goes back to, like, in 50 years, there has been no, there, I mean, again, white people, we should know. And it becomes like, how would I say, it's to me, I don't want to be like high-headed about it, but it's like, I try to have a mindset of like, okay, if I really can affect this, that if I can do something that won't hurt black people, then I won't do it. In like, especially if I can be, if I know, even if it doesn't affect the ideal maximum, I could look out for each black person that I can. And I have to have an idea of black people, because that's what the whole being of black people here, the history and just the raw biology of the fact that I'm here is not necessarily like, you know, I want to know what boat I was on. I want to know all that information. And like knowing that the people who and their descendants who, you know, and maybe the people who don't have nothing to do with slavery, but having to came over here after the Civil War and all that, who are aware of this, but don't give, you know what I'm saying, give grace to black people. So it's like, I hate to be like the encyclopedia about it, but yeah, like, we gotta really, like, in 50 years, like, you know, it, like you're saying, like, I don't know what the value would be in terms of, like, bringing people together, because, like, the mediums that we have now are different. And again, like, I love having black people together in one space. I really do. It's good, but it's not necessary. And in fact, like, when you say Baraka's uniformity through, you know what I'm saying, uniform through not uniformity, you know what I'm saying? We don't have to look alike to like, you know what I'm saying? Right. We have the same thoughts. But the problem with that is that ideology can be a bit too tenuous. And then the whole being uniform can be irregularized.
Go ahead, Richard.
Can I ask you something? I mean,
go ahead, Richard.
Because we're talking about organizations, right? When we talk about institutions. So would you say within your body, in each of our bodies, there is uniformity and diversity?
No, I mean, if you do a hard, like, I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, a lot of people do not look alike. I mean, there's a lot of, you know.
Your liver, your lungs, your heart, your pancreas, you know, all of those things are different.
Yeah.
Right? They are different. Mm-hmm. But aren't they working together? And if they don't work together, isn't that called illness?
Yeah, you get sick.
Yes.
So isn't that a model? So are we saying, and if I'm here listening right, are we saying that we cannot operate like something, as human, we can't create a relationship, mm-hmm. even in the moment of being in a hostile environment, that we can't create a relationship with each other, recognizing our difference, that will be able to provide a optimal outcome for all of us? Are we supposed to say that can't, or am I hearing you saying that can't be done?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I think that we can adapt. But I mean, what I'm saying is, like, my perspective on how I would, you know, do an idealistic optimalized, because I mean, the situations aren't optimalized, but it's important to think about what would lead to steps that can lead to more optimization in the midst of adversity. Because you want to win on your own terms. You want to sit here and taunt at the people who are giving you adversity. And like, whatever you throw at me, I'm immune to it. It doesn't matter. Black people and what we're doing is going to come up. And we're going to, you see our next move. And it's like, you can see the people who are trying to adversely sweat and try to talk tough. And they reveal themselves. And you just discredit them and water them down. Because tactics have no race. You can do divide and conquer on white people if you really want to. You can really figure out what white people is really fucking with black people, what area, and then sort out all the rest. And then if those people, you can keep them in a little file. If those people happen in later times, want to get froggy, we can go ahead and expand that net, because we don't already. You got to cut it down to size. But I understand it's like.
But Ohio, you know, but like, Ohio, you got
times,
you got
like eight times more. No, what was it? It'd be like five times more white people. Then don't try to fight 5-on-1.
Well,
figure out the 20% that like you can really figure out how to like ether. Okay, let's get to the next 20% and ether them, and then the other 160% who gets froggy, we can start to see who's trying to give us adversity.
Well, before I move on, Ohio,
because all Ohio, this like Ohio, nebulousness about who it is, Ohio, like, we gotta like amplify that.
Listen,
it just can't be people in just geographical America, just
Ohio
people. No, you have places, man, and organizations too.
Ohio. Before I move on, I want you to understand that the analogy you're giving is good. Fighting back against a few that does this or the certain percentage that does, but you have to organize to fight. You can't fight as individuals. You're going to always lose. You got to organize to fight a system. You have to. You have to. That's without question. You have to organize. I just want to make that clear. I understand what you're saying. You draw an analogy about fighting and things like that. You can't fight as individuals. You got to organize. Hey, man, thanks for your contribution.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Talk to you. Let's go to let's take the next call. Let's go to 4444.
Hey, appreciate it. You're here, man. Y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, before I get to the synopsis you brought up about did I hear Lil Joe say the other week that Ralph done transitioned to the ancestors?
Who?
Ralph, Brother Ralph.
No. Don. No.
Okay, I thought I heard you say something about Ralph or somebody, but I'm glad it did have yes sir, man. Since you played about that analogy about the 1972 and the whole emphasis of them Negroes on stage was one thing, what you said. They want to be assimilation and integrationists. And you know what that word is called for? What they call that in the year 2021? You know what that word is? Swirling. That niggas want to swirl. I keep trying to tell y'all, man. You cannot expect your enemy that enslaved you to free you. And see, I use deductive and inductive reasoning. And the thing that they did not say was what? Economics. Now, I probably could look it up. I wonder how many black banks was around on that time in 1972. Because it's all economics, man. Okay, so they were just talking about freaking swirling. That's what I brought up last week. That swirling stuff, man. That's what they were doing then. They're doing it now. Okay? And now let's move to the future. Okay? I found out something called Echo 6. Y'all know what Echo 6 is?
No.
Look it up, Echo 6, Richard. Okay, Echo 6 is a public notice to all foreign creditors of Africa. Policy number Echo 6 ACFT8, policy name African Debt Elimination. In the Royal Court of House of Kings within the 6th region in the continent of Africa and the diaspora, Treasury Division, the Royal Court of the House of Kings within the economic community of states, nations, and territories and realms of the African diaspora, saying they did this November 20th, 2020, where they calling for debt elimination, where Africa not going to pay these devils not one dime, man. Okay, and I sent it to OSHA, and I sent it to y'all. Okay, this is a beautiful thing, man. It was on the 26th date of November in the year 2020, these African nations in Jamaica and all the black diaspora say, we ain't paying no one dime, man. I want y'all to check into that, man. I sent it to y'all, Richard and Elliot, okay? So it's called African Debt Elimination, man.
Mm.
All right? There's some beautiful things going on, man, okay? And the public, I know, I just found out about this today, man. What y'all think about that, Elliot and Richard?
It's a good, like you said, it's a good thing, and it goes along when it goes along with the free trade agreement. If that, although we here in North America, we here And this is why, Elliot, why I think that what you bring up about the convention process, because we have to be unified and organized and have a policy not only where those African nation states can benefit, but where we can benefit too, because we create a trade relationship to assist us in our wealth creation and in our creating really what's been our strategic vision going back to the 18th century.
Yes, sir. Well, I want y'all to check it out, man.
We're here, and we just see them getting their debt relieved, and we and our children running around with $200,000, $300,000 worth of college debt or no, you know, or a credit card debt, then we are not being able, we're not utilizing the advantage that the system of that white domination has put all of us in. So we still have to be organized and unified. That's my...
I agree. And this organizing thing, but I think what my brother was before me was trying to explain, what I use logic, okay? And I study, you heard of Sun Tzu, Richard, the Art of War? You heard of that? So that's what I go by, the Art of Sun Tzu, the Art of War. And what my brother was trying to explain is, you take what the enemy gives you and you use it to your advantage. That's how you beat their ass. That's how I beat them all the time, man. Whatever they give me, I use to my advantage, bro. Okay, that's Sun Tzu, the Art of War. It worked, man. It worked every, because I ran work. These devils will not take no orders from no black man. Okay, and once we realize that, then we stop taking orders from their ass. Okay, the Art of War. That's my brother. I hope my brother's still on the line. Check out Sun Tzu, the Art of War. We got them, man. We got them. They time up. They know it, bro. It's a beautiful time to get our stuff together. And I don't do no damn swirling, no integration, none of that crap. Okay, that's what I was trying to explain to you last week, Brother Elliot. That swirling shit is that same thing that them cats are talking about in 72.
They wasn't talking about no swirling, but, you know. That's the same thing, bro.
It's a little different. Different terms, man. If you want to integrate with the ass, that's swirling, bro. Okay. Simple as that.
All right.
Okay? That's simple as that, Elliot. I know it's hard for you to see stuff.
No, it ain't hard for me to see. Thanks.
I don't go back and forth with no Negro about no terms of endearment, man.
All right.
Peace and blessing. I'll check y'all next episode.
Talk to you. Let's go to 410. That's in Maryland. 410, Maryland.
Hey, peace and blessings, Brother Richard, Brother Elliot. It's Brother Brandon calling from Maryland, Baltimore, Eugene People's Progress Party. How y'all feeling out there?
Hey, Brandon. How you doing? Can you get, Brandon, can you get, I think we might be on a hands-free. Can you get closer to your...
It's better, brother.
Yes.
Yeah, just saying what's up with everyone out there in radio land. So the discussion itself, I just want to make sure I stay on tempo because, you know, a lot of that, you easily can get off track. So the discussion itself, I think it was poignant, and it's more or less a zeitgeist, brothers and sisters that's out there as well. What you guys are presenting is so much of a zeitgeist that tomorrow night we're having the discussion on the National Black Independent Political Party with a movie called Nation Time to specifically talk about, okay, we arrived. Like, hey, you know, you went left, you got screwed. You went right, you got beat. So what you going to do? Stand in the middle or like that song say, you know, clowns to my left, jokers to the right, and here we are stuck in the middle with you. Like, no, we look at it as, okay, we here. I get it. You know, some of us are socialists, communists, pan-Africanists, nationalists. All right, let's get there. But first, let's start to look at what history was trying to say through an echo and spear that down to where we are today with what happened on the first week of January and a lot of things that, you know, have been preceded before then. And the reason why I say it's a zeitgeist is because it's just, again, it's just ironic that, you know, your brothers are discussing this and on the Fannie Lou Hamer political education class, we're like, look, it's mandatory. Everybody come because we talking about the direction for an independent black political party, mm-hmm. be that local, state, or nationally, where you are, where you want to be, what are some of the things you want on that platform? You want reparations to be on here? Okay, don't get upset. We put it on there, but it's not the way that you would like it. Come participate in part of the discussion because one thing that, you know, we wanted to talk about as well as what you were highlighting with the discussion on the National Black Independent Party discussion of that coalition or that meeting that arrived, is that you're going to get a lot of ideas. We're going to get a lot of folks who will disagree. You're going to get a lot of folks who do agree. And the saddest, I ain't going to say the saddest, but the contradiction will be most of us are not going to understand it because we haven't been introduced to the idea.
Okay.
So we don't brush people off. We try, and we do more than meet people where they are. We come to the reality that, okay, are our material needs being met? Right now, you know, as we see, you know, we're dealing with, you know, domestic and national terrorism. Bro, Africa is getting it from the U.S. empire, and we touching hell from the same U.S. empire that produces cops that oppresses us and allow white nationalism itself to flourish on either end or either end of the sphere. So for us, we come together, we be able to have that poignant discussion and discuss the sign of the times and be able to align our view on exactly what are our material needs so we can begin to work through those contradictions on what we can agree on moving forward. Sort of like an 80-20 rule for that matter. Are we going to move with the 80% we disagree with, or are we going to move with the 20% we agree with, or vice versa, you know? So I think this is a very good discussion, and it's very qualitative. If it's for everyone out there that need to hear it, this is a qualitative discussion, especially for the poor and working class Black folks in this country, particularly. At the time, to be able to align power.
Brandon, listen, man, I know you guys are doing the work. I just want to thank you for chiming in here in this discussion this evening. I didn't know you was out there listening, but maybe
I try to catch you as often as I can, brother. We try, really do.
Well, listen, I'm glad that in the political education class that you're having, that the people are exposed to this. Some of the folks that might attend tomorrow, or when did you say it was going to be, Tuesday or Monday?
No, it's Mondays. We have them pretty much the third Mondays of every month, and then we have a statewide meeting as well. So the idea is to be able, again, to, you know, get people enlightened to say, hey,
exactly,
you may not be feeling the idea of a Ujima, but it's probably someone on that line you can connect with that you can work with in your community to find solutions. Use us as a bridge if we can't be used as a tool, but do something. Just don't be an armchair pundit or armchair politic saying that don't do this and don't do that when you ain't even active in your own space, you know?
Go ahead, Richard.
No, I'm agreeing. That's the punctuated point.
Brandon, thanks as always, yes, man, and I'll be in touch.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. You brothers, take care.
Talk to you.
Take care.
Brandon and them doing work on their organization. Then they're going to be talking about this tomorrow. That you know, that film that you mentioned that to me, you sent an email in reference to that. I never seen that film.
Right.
Yeah, I never seen that film, but maybe it's something that I could try to see if I can get my hands on. Let's go to Toronto, 647. Toronto.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yeah, life is a three-ring circus. When you were talking about the three-ring circus, I think you ought to go and listen to Blue Magic from your hometown, Philadelphia.
Here you go.
Ted Mills and the boys. going round and round and round and round. But what I wanted to talk about was the fact that Martin Luther King went to Ghana in 1957, and he came back and he delivered a speech, which you can get on YouTube, The Birth of a Nation. It's if you listen to King speak, you would think it was Kwame Ture or talking or Mukasa Willie Ricks. I mean, he's deep off into the African situation. And the second thing is that Patrice Lumumba, this is the 60th anniversary of the assassination of Patrice Lumumba. And, you know, Malcolm X said that Patrice Lumumba was the greatest African, was the greatest human, I guess the greatest African that ever walked the earth. And I just wanted to throw that out there to ask the youth that we should not only commemorate these people, but we should also attempt to emulate and follow their example, because Patrice Lumumba was a great Pan-Africanist who tried to set up a united Africa. He had an agreement with a Patrice Lumumba Nkrumah, secretary, and Modibo Keita of Mali. And I've also heard that, not Patrice Lumumba, but that Ahmed Sekou-Touré was a part of that coalition as well. They talked about creating a United States of Africa as far back as 1958, 1960s. And basically, I just wanted to put that in the mix.
Listen, thank you for your contribution. And we know that, and hopefully the listening audience, if some of us don't know, that what you're talking about, brother, is against anything that Europeans, U.S. domestic or foreign policy, they don't want any of those things that you just talked about. A united Africa. They don't want us uniting with Africa. They don't want that, and they're going to stop it at all costs. So I just want us to understand that. We might, and for some of our people that don't understand, saying, well, we can work with other people. We should work with other people. They don't want that. So we're going to have to be, I don't want to use the word shrewd because it shouldn't be any shrewdness about it, but we're going to have to be skillful on how we try to organize and how we organize moving forward, because this man has perfected the art of incorporating and tainting the minds of some of our people, and especially the men that had been activists. Activists now. I'm not talking about then.
Mm-hmm. Can I say one more thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people see Pan-Africanism as the unification of Africa, the continent of Africa, under scientific socialism, but some see Pan-Africanism as from Cape Town to Nova Scotia under scientific socialism. And I think that you and Elliot and Richard, you guys are the Pan-Africanists that see Pan-Africanism as a worldwide system as opposed to just a continent of Africa. I know I'm correct in saying that, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we work within our own spheres. And I like to just, if you mind, just build on it in just this thought, in the sense of that doesn't negate that where you are, you can be able to erect the policies to assist that.
I agree.
I hear people seem like that we're trying to get looking over there in absence of being here. We have to look where we are because we're the cultural matrix, but we can make connections over there like other people do. And we have, and if we look at ourselves in our own center, that we're looking at it from a civilizational perspective that wasn't lost by what is called the Biafra or the disruption. We didn't just because this brief history and time is just a brief history and time. It's you know, like a drought would be. You know what I mean? You correct to yourself to the environment of the moment. You don't like, I don't know. But the other thing I think that you bring up, I think everybody should listen to that speech that Dr. King did when he came back from Ghana. And also, Elliot, you know, the brother brought up about the film Nation Time.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two good things that in this moment, out of this conversation, helps us shape our world, just like listening to, you know, those leaders and men and women from 50 years ago. So I appreciate you bringing up both of those points, bro.
And the last thing I want to say is that George Jackson talked about wanting to live in Tanzania. He talked about, you know, learning Swahili and George could speak some Swahili, but you know, most of our there's a wing of our people, be they in Africa or the Caribbean or North America, that have always had a world a African internationalist or Pan Africanist outlook. I think we need to give ourselves some credit for that as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Brother Richmond, thank you for your contribution.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. All right. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we got two more callers on the line. And we'll get to them right at the break. You can get involved in the time we have left by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. The time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global KometsU Black family, to join your interconnected KometsU Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of Black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the Black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man. Because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen. We're the singers and the dancers. And we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:26 here, Sunday evening. We're in open forum on Time for an Awakening, and got a couple more callers left on the board before we wind things up for this evening. One thing I want to mention to the listening audience, and lost a good friend of mine a couple of days ago, and a good man. Some folks that are boxing fans might know him from the ring. He came up in the tradition of the regular Philly fighters, and in 1983, he won the he beat the number one contender for the lightweight title, which was Robin Blake. And then in 1984, he beat Charlie Choo Choo Brown to become the number one contender for the title. And the title holder at that time was Ray Boom Boom Mancini. But he stepped aside, and they paid Tyrone some money to step aside so Livingstone Bramble could fight Ray Boom Boom Mancini. And Bramble beat the crap out of Boom Boom Mancini. And then Tyrone fought him in 1985, fought Livingstone Bramble, and they lost. He retired from the ring in 1988, came on home and worked in the community, worked with children. Every time I seen him when he was with the city, he had a van full of children, taking them to the rec center, teaching them boxing, talking to them as young men, just talking to them about life. And lost him a couple of days ago. He had some health challenges prior to, and his immune system was kind of compromised when the COVID-19 attacked him. And he's went on with the ancestors. But two things, just a personal note. If Tyrone had accepted that money to step aside Bramble could fight Boom Boom Mancini, Tyrone would have been champion because he would have kicked Ray Boom Boom Mancini's behind. But just wanted to mention that. And another thing, too, our folks got to understand, and we did the program with Dr. Aleem and Professor Jefferson on, that the main thing, it's not about this vaccine that Europeans is pushing on our community. It's about building up your immune system. We got to build our immune system through changing our diet, eating the proper foods, and taking the proper vitamins to help build our immune system. That virus was able to attack Tyrone and end his life because his immune system was compromised. So just wanted to make mention of that. Lost a good friend a couple days ago, and he'll be missed. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to 215. 215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Good show tonight, my brothers. Good show.
All right, sir.
Brother Elliot and Richard, let me say before I get deep into the y'all discussing about the clips y'all played of the different speakers. First, Brother Elliot, I'm watching the game. It's Tampa Bay up 23-20 with Jameis and Winston. They did a trick play in the first half. Jameis Winston came in through a perfect 56-yard touchdown pass on a razzle dazzle. So I'm saying to myself, now you got this boy come in the game. He played all since that one time he got in. He threw a 56-yard perfect touchdown. And yet you got this boy, and Drew Brees just threw another dumb interception. And this boy's sitting on the bench. And New Orleans is going to probably lose this game. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just the racism is just so blatant, man. They're going to lose this game. You got Jameis Winston. This man ain't played all year, ain't pretty much no year. He come right in the game on a trick play, throw a perfect 56-yard touchdown when he on the big. But you got these mediocre white boys that's in the league starting, you know, on the bench, second string, whatever. And hey, he a third-string quarterback on this team. And these white boys, they can't play a lick. They first-stringers. In some cases, second-stringers. If I'm telling the Saints right now, I ain't coming back next year, bro. I ain't no way I'm going to stand and wish behind these guys, man. Come on. You know, and as far as Tyrone concerned, Ellie, it hit me hard, too, because like I said, Ellie, you know, I knew Tyrone well. We went to school together, went to community college together, and that's where I met him back in the 80s and stuff. And I found him to be a very nice brother, man. We used to have some good conversations. We used to sit out there in the lobby of community college back when the campus was down on 11th Street, right in the 11th and Market, the old campus. Me and Tyrone, all my boys, Rick, and all, we used to sit down and talk sports, talk about the sports, women, you know, all the stuff that men talk about, you know what I mean? And like you said, brother, he's definitely going to be missed, man. You know what I mean? What a good brother, man. Just sad to see, like, you know, see him make transit. But he's with the ancestors now. My condolences go out to Tyrone's family, and may Allah grant some paradise, man. He's going to be missed. He's a good brother, man. Good human being, man. You know, Elliot, I don't know where to begin. I listen to the different, you know, people that you spoke, you know, with Roy Ennis, like you said, like his life led at the end. You know, you can draw a parallel between Roy Ennis and Elvis Cleaver, because Roy Ennis on that clip, he sound militant. But as you know, near the end of his career, life, he was a complete coon. I'm just not going to sugarcoat it. This guy was a real Negro. He became like a conservative Republican, like, and stuff, mm-hmm. Running around with the. I mean, it's amazing how these guys flip like that. I mean, how can you go from being, you know, so-called black man, stand-up black man? Even if you get disenchanted, Elliot, with some of the things that black people do, because sometimes our people can do things, but you don't never lose your and start, you know, siding with the enemy. That's what I'm saying, Elliot. You know what I mean? If you get disenchanted with like-minded brothers and stuff, or sisters who you think disappointed, our people. Okay, fine. Get mad with them. Don't deal with them. But don't sit up there and start siding with the enemy. See, that's the same thing I had with Elvis Cleaver, the same way. He was Mr. Militant and everything, but at the end, he was supporting people like Ronald Reagan, a man that tried to destroy the Black Panthers, remember?
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to sit there and support Ronald Reagan? Come on, man. There's no excuse for him. We got to call these people out when they do stuff like that, man. There's no excuse. Again, I'm going to say it again. Even if you get upset with some certain sisters or brothers in the struggle and stuff, and you take it personal, okay, don't deal with that person. But don't sit there and side with your enemy, man, who you know don't give a damn about none of y'all. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I always have an issue with people like Roy Ennis and Elvis Cleaver. How do they those at the end of their careers, man. Supporting people like Ronald Reagan, man. Come on, man. Please, you know. But anyway, it just shows, though, you know, how we got to stay strong. And like you said, if you listen to different speakers, the stuff they were saying back then, Elliot, it was almost like apropos because, like when the brother mentioned what the Democrat Party going to do, we still having that thing 50-something years later, the Democrat Party, you know, what they going to do. You know what I'm saying? We still hearing that now. You know, so, and we're going to see the same thing with the one that can take office on Wednesday. And then, of course, you'll see this charade that's coming up on Monday on Dr. King, how they're going to, you know, definitely take Dr. King's and distort his image, distort his legacy and everything like that. And see, one thing, a lot of the black terrestrial radio stations, including my influence, now they've been getting better over the last couple of years because I've been complaining about them stop, you know, given the sanitized version of Dr. King to pacify white folk, I said play those speeches at the end, because you know, and anybody that's honest and want to be honest with history know damn well that Dr. King was not no love person at the end. He was hated by white America at the end, and many black people. So don't keep playing that stuff about I have a dream. Play them later speeches when he spoke out against America about the Vietnam War, the Riverside Baptist Church speech, when he called for economic boycott of white business. Play that Dr. King. Don't play that sanitized version that you know is palatable to white people, because you're doing Dr. King a disservice, and you're also doing our black children a disservice. Because if you want to teach black children the truth, give them the whole Dr. King. Don't give them that sanitized version, you know. So we're going to expect that kind of nonsense with many black outlets coming on Monday, you know. And just so a whole bunch of litany of things. And then, of course, you got going on with the killings of our people by the police, nothing being done. You got police unions, you know, siding with the Proud Boys. You got all that. You got the black misleadership and everything. And again, you could, like you said, you could just play that. If you could preimpose 1972 here in the 2021, and you would think it's the same. Yeah, it would be nothing different. You'd think it's the same. Because 1972 all over again. You just preimpose it up to now. Because the same thing that got brothers were saying on that stuff, even if speakers I disagree with them, the same thing we fighting with and dealing with here in 2021, you know? Same thing. And it was a brilliant strategy for Mary Baraka to call those things and for people like Tony Brown to be the moderator, people like that. I mean, it just goes to show, just when you think things change, as the old expression goes, you realize how much they remain the same. You know what I mean? That's basically what it comes down to.
Well, and the thing is, it didn't remain the same for black people. It got worse.
It got worse.
And if you notice, right. Charles Diggs, who was the head of the caucus at that time, he mentioned in that clip, he said, in the 13 members of the black caucus. So at that time, it was 13 members. Now it's 50-something. It might be close to 60 members of the black caucus. So you can see how the membership has swelled of the black caucus. And and the black problems that's facing our community has swelled also. So electing these people and putting them in so-called positions of power has not translated for our people.
No, because like Brother Fred used to say, our late Brother Fred, supposed to say, separation of the worlds fall off. Like Fred used to say, black face on white power means nothing. And that's what it basically comes down to. Oh, and let me just backtrack, and I get off so the next caller could get on, Elliot. Real quick, you know, when Brother West was on, he was mentioning about, he said, little Joe talking about myself, about somebody making transition. I think what Brother West was mentioning when I mentioned about Brother Rob, but that was a few weeks, that was about over a month ago. Maybe he was referring to Brother Rob because he said Ralph, but I'm sure he probably meant Brother Rob, since both of their names begin for R. I just thought I'd, you know, say that, okay, Elliot? I think what Brother West meant was Brother Rob, I think, you know.
Yeah, he didn't put Brother Ralph with the ancestors. Don, don't do that.
I know Ralph probably says news to me.
Oh, my goodness.
He said my death been grossly misguided. You know that old saying, go back, death been grossly overstated and stuff, you know. But that's what Brother West meant and stuff, you know. And lastly, Brother Elliot, you saw what happened. And again, let me clarify this. I'm off, Brother Ellis, so Brother Jacob come on behind me. I'll say this clearly. Now, you've seen what happened in Philadelphia over the past, was Thursday or Friday, with an ignorant Negro shot and killed the white boy that was walking his dog. So you heard about it, right, Elliot?
Mm-hmm.
Down in North Philadelphia. And don't get me wrong. Now, I'm glad the police arrested this bum because he had no business taking that man's life. I get so tired of these Negroes doing this foolishness and stuff. I mean, you rob the man, you don't get nothing off him. You kill a man, and you kill him.
They already made the arrest?
Yeah, they arrested him. And that's why I'm bringing this to your attention, Elliot. I'm glad the police arrested this bum because he's the same kind of nigger that would shoot a black person. He's just a low life. But my point, Elliot, you've seen how fast that they arrested them. See, they take white life seriously, the police. Now, I give prime example how you going to contrast this, Elliot. I'm watching Channel 6 News last night. It was a black woman in there, and I cried for this sister because she's still grieving because she finally got the FOP and the police union and the crime commissioner put up a $20,000 reward leading to the killer of her son back in July of last year, 2020. Her son was a nice young man. His name was Kenneth Moss. And he had like a hyphenated name. Was Kenneth Moss Houston, I think it was. Well, long story short, Ellen and Brother Richard, this brother was had his whole life ahead of him. He had started his own business that was going to benefit the black community because he was really pro-black brother. He had told her he said, Mom, I'm going to get a haircut. And that's the last you heard from him. He was going to get a haircut. And they found him slumped over the wheel of his car in North Philadelphia with a gunshot wound to the head. And they believe it was a robbery attempt. So, remember, his death happened July of last year and stuff. Nobody been brought to justice for his murder. But yet this white boy get killed just on Thursday, and they got his killer just like that. You know what I mean? They waste, and this is the second white boy that has got killed over the last month or so, and they got and they arrested their killers, who happen to be black, unfortunately. They arrested their killers just like that. But when our people get murdered by our people, these ignorant fools out here, it's like they could care less. Like Brother Stanley Crawford, who you know real well, Elliot, and stuff. Brother Stanley, we only right his son's killer been brought to justice because his son was murdered back in September 18, and only right his son's killer, Elliot, was brought to justice because Stanley raised hell. I was with Stanley on several occasions. He would tell the white detective, he said, look, man, I'm not letting up on y'all guys till y'all find out who killed my son. It won't bring my son back, obviously, but damn it, I want some closure, some justice for my, I want my son's killer walking, he stay out in these streets so he could kill somebody else. He said, I'm going to stay on y'all. And he put the pressure on, he stayed on there behind to finally they got the killer of his son. So that's all I'm saying. You contrast to how the police go all out when a white person get killed, especially at the hands of our people and stuff, and then how they contrast when our people die at the hands of our people, they could give a damn. In other words, let the niggas kill each other. We could care less, but damn it, you kill a white person, we gonna move heaven, we gonna move mountains, we gonna get your black ass. When you kill a, you understand what I'm saying, like Richard? When you kill a white person, we gonna get you. And that's the message of it, you know? And they do the same thing of it with these children. Anytime a child is missing or sexually assaulted, that's a horrible thing. I don't care if it's a white child, black child, Latino, or Asian. But you notice, Elliot, when a white child is missing, they have them all over milk cartons or post office. It happened to our black children. They've been missing for years. Nothing ever happens to them. And they've been taking laws and changed it. When that little white girl was murdered, then they changed the Megan's Law. You know what I mean? They named bills and legislation after these people because they could care less about black children. So they use that white European mindset is the same, whether it's black children being sexually assaulted or raped or murdered, or with black men being raped or being killed, they could care less. But when it's a white person, oh, hell, they going to move mountains and make sure that their killers are brought to justice. And that's all I want to say in closing, Elliot. He put me on mute, and I'm gone.
Thank you for your contribution, brother.
You're welcome, Elliot.
Let's go to 646-646.
Hey, what's happening, Richard and Elliot? Listen, right quick, Elliot, what was the brother Tyrone's last name?
Crawley.
Tyrone Crawley.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I know who that is.
CW.
Yeah, I know him.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Yo, your boy Research West is a funny cat. Mr. God Bless America, how could he equate Ralph with someone else?
Dang, that brother is gone.
You know, Ralph must be asleep because I'm surprised he ain't called up yelling and hollering, man. You know, I don't know. And then he got the nerve to talk about squirreling or whatever and coming at you with that madness. Come on now, you know he a buck. What is wrong with him? But listen, what I really wanted to talk about was, have you noticed in the media that they're not talking about this narrative on how Trump played his so-called, backers? I mean, the way that they were played and manipulated, for what reason, I really don't know. Because from what it seems, all of them are going to pay a pretty serious price for that so-called insurrection, which to me, I don't know how serious it was. I mean, you know, I hope that the brother Goodwin don't become like that brother who, saved or identified Watergate. What was his name? Tom Willis, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Willis. It was amazing how he supposedly did such a good deed, and afterwards, his life was totally decimated and destroyed. You know, I mean, that right there is kind of crazy. But the thing is, it's going to be interesting come Tuesday, who's Trump's going to pardon, because that's probably going to be his last act between now and the time he get out of office. I'm wondering if he's going to pardon Kwame Kilpatrick, Julian Assange, and I don't really know who else, but it would be nice if he threw a thumb in their nose and pardon both of them. I mean, you know, I'm like this. I don't understand what's the benefit to society having someone like Kwame Kilpatrick doing all the time that he's doing, as educated in what he's gone through. I mean, he could be more of a benefit to the community than anything, man. I mean, I always thought he should have got some time, and then they should have put some restrictions on him, and then they should have made it to whereas he would, after do his time, come back into the community and educate these young kids and do something on that positive for note. But, I mean, what is really being gained by having someone like him with his ability and skill set in jail for 24 years? That to me is like crazy, man. And there's so many people like that. You know, they got political prisoners now who've been in jail for like 40, 50 years in their 80s. What are they still in jail for? I mean, it's just crazy. And nobody really, really addresses it or deal with it. And, you know, the thing is, I don't understand why, you know, our great Lord and Savior Biden wouldn't put a parole someone like Kwame Kilpatrick. From my understanding, him and his mother was cool. You know, his mother was at one time before all of this madness, she was a heavyweight in the political game as far as Detroit in the black community was. And you know, in the United States also, everybody knew Carolyn Fitzpatrick, I think her name was. So, I mean, we're headed for some real interesting times, because I really want to know, what are black people going to get from Biden? Matter of fact, let's even talk about what you were saying earlier. What do they expect from him? I have absolutely no expectations whatsoever from him, Elliot and Richie. I know I was talking with one of my tenants today, and she was saying how she hoped that she get that extra $1,400. Because she was saying to me, I got the $600, and it was nothing Matter of fact, she got more than six because they gave her some money for a kid. And she was saying to me that, you know, it don't make a dent in nothing that's going on. You know what I mean? And I mean, her reality is that, you know, what you call them picked up her share of what she had to pay, you know, in regards to her rent situation. But other than that, you know, food and just necessities and things like that, the money and, you know, cell phone and, you know, things of that nature. She said when she got the money, there was she was gone and she was still in the hole. Now, just imagine if that's her who's getting some form of assistance. What about all of the other people that's not getting no form of assistance?
Yeah.
So what's going to happen in, let's say, a couple of months? Let's say May and June. I mean, man, this it's crazy, B. It's really crazy. And I don't think we as a community have anything or trying to put really anything in place to deal with what's going on. We just so happy this new dirtbag is in office, new overseer, new master, that we don't even have a forward agenda. I mean, like, me personally, I'm telling everybody that I know, if you got a little money, come together with a couple of people and put together an LLC and get into the real estate game. Because, man, come May, June, bruh, it's going to be a plethora of properties available all over this country because I don't think that they're going to do the necessary bailout to help people. Definitely landlords and housing owners, just like they did with Obama when they had the crises. So whereby you got a whole bunch of people that's in a situation that, you know, are in trouble, you know, in your city, my city, all over. So it's probably going to be a glut of properties. And if you come together, man, and you got the right amount of money, you could do it. And the only thing that will help the industry, I believe, moving forward is that they're going to have to create programs to help people pay this rent. Not only the back rent, but to move forward, because, I mean, the economy isn't going to move that much forward with this so-called vaccination. And the crazy thing is, to show the ineptness of this damn Trump, and let's just keep it real, he ain't even doing the necessary things to move the vaccination forward. You know what I mean? So whereby, when is the vaccination going to be handled properly? Now, is Biden going to handle it better? I would assume so. You would only have to, you know what I mean? Because the emphasis will change. And I think they're smart enough to realize that they're going to have to put forward that kind of narrative. But then, you know, another thing that nobody talks about when they talk about what Trump has done is the type of damage that he's caused in the global markets. I mean, just look at what he did between the U.S. and China in regards to soybeans. I was talking with a brother last week in regards to an investment group that he has put together to buy farming land out there in Iowa, Wisconsin, places like that, that were hit hard with soybean. And, you know, he was saying there was some opportunities. You know, I told him I didn't want to be involved in that. That wasn't, you know, that's just a little too far for me. But the thing is, isn't it the role of the United States to grow the empire, right? So whereby, if you're growing the empire, why didn't he open up new territories for those farmers to be able to sell their soybeans around the world? And nobody addressed that. He talked about all this money he supposedly gotten from China,
But when he did give away some of that money, it didn't go to everyday farmers. It went to the big corporations. Do you know the amount of farmers, soybean farmers, that have lost their land and committed suicide? Nobody ever talks about it. You notice that?
Yeah, well, I wasn't aware, but okay.
It's quite bad, man. A lot of them, the small mom and pop and small producers, they lost a lot, man. They're barely surviving. I mean, the brother that you have come on that talks about, you know, the farmer, maybe you should talk to him about it, because he would definitely know. But I mean, if you really look at history, and it's going to be real interesting how history is going to report the 4 years of Trump. Everybody talks about the worst president of our time would be Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was way better president than Donald Trump. I mean, first of all, if we be honest and we be truthful, Donald Trump shouldn't have never been in the office. He shouldn't have never been president of the United States, because if you look at his 4 years and what he's really done and produced, I don't think he did anything other than deal with this whole tax situation, which, you know, maybe for homeowners, it's not that good. For, you know, investment groups and things of that nature, it's all right. It's a little better. But it'll be real interesting to see if Biden corrects some of the things that Trump did tax-wise. We as the people have to watch out our new slave master, which I believe is the Latino. I think the Latino is going to flood into this country. They're going to do some things with DACA that's not going to put us as black people in the best light. Unfortunately, we don't realize that, because we're totally moving forward with this whole integration, inclusion, diversity, all of that bull sugar honey iced tea, which is just a smokescreen for having somebody else dominate us on every level. And it's unfortunately we don't realize it, but I mean, I don't know. Other than that, you know, we'll see. It's going to be real interesting times as far as any more obstruction. We got to watch out for that with the Democratic Party. And like I say, the Republican Party, they going to do it what they going to do. But to me, now the most dangerous person in politics is no longer Mitch McConnell. It's Joe Manchin. Because Joe Manchin is going to cause more headaches than people could really ever imagine, unless people put their foot on his neck. And when I say put his foot on the neck, I'm talking about immediately, because he's gonna become an obstructionist to certain things. You know what I mean? But hopefully they'll put him in line, because if they don't, it's gonna be problems and trouble for moving forward an agenda. And other than that, we'll see what happens, man. I'll be interested to see over the next 2 or 3 weeks what the stock market's going to look like. And I'll also be interested to see what New York State and Washington, D.C. is going to do in regards to going after Trump. It would be nice if they go after him. I mean, just to cut him off at his knees, because I think there's a lot of people who want to punish him for getting in the office. And, you know, that it is what it is. But listen, man, y'all have a good week, man. And as always, a great show. And, you know, just got to do what we got to do. Hopefully we'll be able to move forward as a community and do something, man. You know, and hopefully we'll be able to survive with the next 4 years going to be. And it's going to be real interesting to see how we're going to reward the people that supposedly did so much for the Democratic Party in getting those two Senate seats in Atlanta. I see that they named this guy, Jamie Harrison, as the new head of the DNC. Oh, and lastly, you know your boy Roland No Neck Martin, he's going to have a channel on Roku, Fire Stick, all of the streaming platforms.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, man, he's going to be on Roku and everything. So, I mean, it's going to be real interesting on what type of content he puts forward. Because, I mean, let's just quickly show the difference between what people like yourself and Oshie and others on the network do and what he do. You know, with this whole vaccination thing, you know, he would never have nobody like Dr. Aleem on or the other guests that you had on the following Sunday after him. He would never have nobody on like that. You know what I mean? It's just like he would never have nobody conscious on this program also. But he wants to promote himself as the news of the black community. So I always ask this question, the news of the black community on what perspective? Being an integrationist, being a Negro queen, being a slave to the white man?
Well, I mean, you got, I think you got another one, that black news channel. It's a lot of people said it was going to be a black Fox when it came out. I've never watched it. I seen the people that was involved in putting it out there. Larry Elder, what's the other guy? J.C. Watts and others that were involved. We know the money didn't come from them, but they're the faces that's out front. So you know what type of, you know, news that is. But I'm just saying, it don't surprise me.
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing is, a lot of the money that your boy Roly Poly gets is from the black community. The black community has given them more money than I would think anybody at this time. Now, I mean, I look at him because I think he gives out some decent information, and I want to keep abreast on the moves that he's making. And I know one thing, and I watch how he's setting it up. He talks all the time about the advertisement budget of the United States, which is something like, I think, $10 billion. And he's talking about he want to make sure that black media gets a piece of that. So I think it's going to be real interesting to see how much of that money he's going to be able to get and generate, because he's pushing hard for it. So whereby, you know, they don't even give, out of that $10 billion, they don't even give black folks 2% of that. So it's going to be real interesting and see how he goes about getting his share of that money. You know what I mean? And that's just interesting. So, you know, I also want to see that now that Biden's in the you know, controlling in the White House, are people like Martin who talk all of that, are they going to come together collectively with other black media and make some sort of demands and pressure so that everybody could get a taste of it? You know, why can't you get a taste of it? I mean, a taste of that money would be unbelievable for you. You know what I mean? A small taste of it. So it's just going to be real interested how they move forward because of the way that they're pushing that whole agenda thing. So, I mean, I'm just looking and see, man, because if you're talking about black media, I think you should be able to receive something. I think all forces in black media should be able to receive something. And I think that a conscious counterbalance narrative should also be placed forward. You know what I mean? Because like you said, that black news channel, I mean, I think I've watched it a total of maybe an hour, and that's over a course of maybe tuning in for 5 or 10 minutes. I didn't find anything interesting about it. You know what I mean? I mean, I've gotten to the point where I don't even look at MSNBC no more. It's going to be real interesting to see what your boy Perm Daddy position is going to be. That's going to be real interesting. I just want to see who's going to be the gatekeepers now that Biden's in office. Because, you know, what you call him is definitely going to be the buffer. Harris is definitely going to be the buffer because they want to set her up to run against whoever the Republicans are going to move forward with, because I think they're going to cut Trump off on the knees. And just the last thing is this. It's going to be real interesting who a lot of Republicans are talking about becoming the new darling of the Republican Party is Nikki Haley. Now, you know Nikki Haley is an Indian, right? From the white perspective.
I don't know.
Yeah, she's an Indian. So Kamala is from the black perspective of Indian, and Nikki Haley is from the white perspective of the Indian. And imagine them two running for the presidency head-to-head. You know white folks will lose their effing mind in this country. It's bad enough they allow a con man like Trump to con them, to now be in a situation where you're going to have two women going after each other that are of Indian heritage. How does that make America great or anything of that nature? I hope it happens. You know it is what it is. But listen, man, enjoy the rest of the week, man. Great show as always. And, you know, let's move forward and let's see what's going to happen with our communities now that, you know, the rains are going to change on Wednesday. It's going to be some interesting times. Hope up.
Talk to you. Richard, come to the end of another program, man.
Yeah.
I guess we'll start working on that calendar for next month. There's a lot of things will be happening next month, so bring more information to the folks. And also, if anybody has any suggestions for subject matter or guests, utilize that timeforawakening@gmail.com and just send us a little note, and then we'll take it from there. I want to thank everybody for listening to the before we leave tonight, I want to give the lineup for Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always interesting conversation and guests on African Perspectives. That's with host Brother Oshie. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. From 6 to 8 later on that evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. From 8 to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Maria Kamban and Sister Nataki Kamban. She hadn't been on for a while, but maybe she'll surprise the listening audience tomorrow and be on. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. On Friday, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 until, and on Saturday, from 4 to 6 in the afternoon, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And later on that evening, from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa would host Brother Alfonso Watkins. And then Time for an Awakening is back on Sunday at 7. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the child.
children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of
children, to save the children.